Today's episode of Open Floor is brought to you by Mack Weldon. Mack Weldon will be the most comfortable underwear, socks, shirts, undershirts, hoodies, and sweatpants that you will ever wear. Ben, talk to me about your sweatpants.
They're comfortable. They shipped quickly. They're fresh. They look good. People like them. I can go to my local store here in California, walk around, and not feel like people are judging me because there's like I'm wearing something that looks sloppy, because I'm not. I'm looking good. I love the Mack Weldon sweatpants, indoors, outdoors. I wear them for days at a time. They're antimicrobial, as you love to tell people everywhere you go. MackWeldon.com, promo code OPEN.
That's awesome. I love that I can just tee you up and you're ready to talk sweatpants. I think Mack Weldon may get upset with us because they make more than sweatpants. There's socks, there's shirts, undershirts. But we're just all about the sweatpants, man. My wife last weekend was like, wow, that's a really good looking pair of sweatpants. And that's really all you can ask for, you know what I mean?
No, women all over the world are saying that to men all over the world about Mack Weldon sweatpants. They will probably say that to you about your Mack Weldon sweatpants. I'm wearing them again right now. I woke up this morning. I was like, you know what? It's time to record the podcast. It's time to slip into my Mack Weldons. Let's do this.
That's right. Way to stay on brand. Well, yo, MackWeldon.com, 20% off using the promo code OPEN. Check it out. Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Open Floor. I'm Andrew Sharp, and on the other line, Ben Golliver. What's up, man?
Not too much, Andrew. I'm just hanging out here at the top of the standings with the LA Clippers, 13-2. You know, they took care of some business against a pesky little team called the Toronto Raptors last night at Staples Center. They're looking good, man. Really good.
Yeah. They've looked really, really, really good. Three reallys over the first month. They've been fantastic. So it's Thanksgiving week. I gave you an assignment last night. I think it was probably like halftime of the Clippers game. And I think we should go bigger picture here because we're only doing one pod this week. Let's look at the first month and look at some lessons we've learned, you know?
Let's reflect on the first month of the season, which probably won't matter at all come June. I'm down for sure 100%. I think we should start with the Clippers, though. And not just because they took 46 and took care of him. I think you got to look at Chris Paul, to me, first month MVP. And I think right there with him, maybe like 1A to 1B in the MVP conversation's got to be Blake Griffin. There's a lot of other good candidates. I mean, you could throw Harden in, definitely could throw LeBron in. Kevin Durant should be in that mix. But I think probably two of the top five at this point, given the Clippers' point differential, how well they've played overall, and also just the consistency of the defensive effort, really from all five positions, but you know most notably Blake, because that maybe hasn't always been his forte. I think you know those guys, to me, are sort of like leading the pack when it comes to early MVPs. And I was looking back at the odds last night. You know that Chris Paul was 33-1 odds to be MVP this season? You know, Blake was, I think, worse than 20-1. So people didn't necessarily see this rejuvenation or this renaissance from the Clippers coming. It's kind of a situation like, you know, same cast, new script.
Yeah, no, not at all. I mean, you look, we can go back a couple weeks. You were talking to me after they blew out the Jazz and said, look, that you should really watch the Clippers. Like, they look different this year. And even I was like, eh, I don't know. We've been down this road before. I don't really have the energy to get invested in another Clippers season. But it's just, if you go right down the roster, every player, whether it's Chris Paul, who does it on both ends, like Chris Paul's defense is so good that he allows them to do a lot of things. Like the combination of he and DeAndre basically guarantee that the Clippers are going to have a good defense. And then Blake Griffin, DeAndre Jordan, and J.J. Redick, I kind of think that like all four of those guys are underrated when you look across the league.
You know what's funny to me? Remember last week when I made my peacekeeping mission team and you got really pissed off about it? But the one point I was trying to make in that, which you know you haven't returned my phone calls or text messages since I did that, so I get the point. You were angry. The one point I was trying to make about Chris Paul in that, though, is that he's always trying to kind of gain every advantage. Like that's like that politician's most important attribute. Did you see the very end of the Raptors game last night, though, where the game's over, they're like up eight, everybody else is walking off the court, and Chris Paul just like jumps forward to steal an inbounds pass so that he can dribble the ball out of the clock? It's like, it was completely unnecessary, but also so perfectly and like quintessentially Chris Paul. These guys are locked in. And here's the thing I would also say, too. There used to be these questions like, oh, Chris and Blake and DJ, you know, of those three, like Blake and DeAndre have more similar personalities, right? The more fun-loving guys, kind of goofy. Chris is very serious, maybe over-serious. Right. I kind of think that he's pulled Blake and DJ into his orbit a little bit, at least on the court. You know, Blake is just, I mean, he's kind of gets the knock for going after the referees a lot, but that guy is really locked in. I mean, he was talking a lot of trash to DeRozan down the stretch. DeAndre was really going after Lowry and DeRozan, you know, throughout the course of the game, just jawing with him. And I sit pretty close, you know, pretty low at the Staples Center. That's kind of how they have the media seating set up compared to a lot of stadiums. And you could just hear these guys back and forth, like it's personal. And by the way, Andrew, it was November 21st and these guys are doing this. You know what I mean?
You know what I also enjoy? Speaking of talking, I like that even as the Clippers have had probably the best start in franchise history, look like the best team in the league, you can still count on at least three like meltdowns from them with the refs every game.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it feels like every game they're playing, it's like they're protecting an unbeaten streak that doesn't exist. Like, remember how kind of salty and chippy the Warriors got, you know, as that opening start, you know, kind of 20 games in, like they were really gunning every single night. The Clippers don't have that streak, but they have that mentality. You know what I mean? Like, they're really kind of striving for perfection. That sounded like a terrible cliche. I apologize for that. But I mean, that's that is just kind of the mentality right now.
I'm talking about just their, it's like a compulsive thing with them and the refs. And it used to annoy me. And now it's kind of like comforting, like to know that no matter how much the world changed, like Blake Griffin is still going to be bitching at officials at least three or four times a game. And that's great. You know, I'm cool with that.
You're turning into the Clippers for your sense of normalcy. That's awesome.
Exactly. Exactly. So, all right. My lesson, since we were supposed to come up with actual lessons, my Clippers lesson was to always bet on LASIK surgery, because after this hot, like 3 or 4 weeks start, now there have been like a handful of stories about Chris Paul getting LASIK. And I just feel like the only time we ever hear about LASIK surgery is after the fact to explain someone's success. So bottom line is, if you're getting LASIK surgery, good things will happen afterward.
I was telling this to Bill Oram, who was sitting next to me at the game last night. I actually believe in the LASIK talk when it comes to Chris Paul. I'm not sure if I've ever really believed in it before, but the guy looks so much more comfortable shooting three-pointers, and like it did seem like he was doing a full body squint last year on some of his threes, you know, to like kind of try to like eye up the hoop, you know. It's like, oh, it's really far away. He just looks more natural, more comfortable with his shooting motion. I mean, this is one of these things where if you didn't know he had LASIK, you know, maybe you wouldn't feel this way. So I understand it's kind of...
Definitely. I don't necessarily remember any of that last year, but I want to believe in the power of LASIK.
Oh, let's go with
the magic of LASIK.
Let's run with it.
And I'm openly gunning for a LASIK ad read over the next few podcasts, so hit us up. But yeah, man, Chris Paul is one of the greatest point guards of all time, and however he's doing it still, like a decade in, it's really, really impressive.
Yeah, he's taking it to a different level, and the three-point shooting for him is huge. I mean, we've talked about it with guys who are total non-shooters, you know, the John Walls of the world. Like, imagine if he could step back and consistently hit that off the dribble three like Damian Lillard. Like, John Wall would be so amazing, right? Like, we've had that conversation before. Yeah. With Chris, he's been a solid three-point shooter. But if he's a good three-point shooter, and if he's a confident three-point shooter in the half court where it's like a possession breaks down, so instead of trying to scramble and scrap something out, you know, for a tough mid-range two, he just steps back into a three-pointer that he can knock down consistently, he's all of a sudden like a different player, a new level, one step closer to sort of that like Steph Curry bailout option, which Golden State always has kind of in their back pocket. So I think, you know, it's a game changer for their offense too. And I think as they go forward, their big question is, how do you overcome and Ba Mute's sort of lack of offense if you're looking at a matchup with the Warriors, right? Because you're kind of playing 4-on-5. Like, you know Redick's going to be an offensive option. You know Griffin. You know DeAndre is going to get his inside. But you're going to need a little bit extra from both Blake and Chris to compensate for, you know, Ba Mute, who's going to be sort of just solely tasked with running around and chasing Kevin Durant for 48 minutes. And I think the way you do that is, you know, Chris adds a big time weapon, like a 3-point shot. Blake, you know, consistently knocks down the mid range shots, those little Tim Duncan bank shots that he was hitting last night in the second half anyways. I mean, those are like the little adjustments, the little developments that help.
Blake has a mode where if he's healthy and if he's rested, he could hit a level where he's on the like LeBron Durant level in terms of guys who could just do everything and make the game twice as easy for the Clippers because he's just that good. And I think the biggest question I had coming into the year was whether he was ever going to be able to be that guy again. The biggest question I have now is whether he can keep this going until May. And then, well, let's get into the second lesson, because my other question with the Clippers as I watch these guys, they look so good and so crisp, and they're just running teams off the floor and basically doing whatever they want, like toying with teams. Like the Raptors, they were basically screwing with the Raptors for the final three quarters last night. But it's going to be pretty heartbreaking if we then have to watch this version of the Clippers just get destroyed by the Warriors. And I think that's still a possibility, right?
Oh, there's serious, serious gutting potential. Like, I mean, this could be like
there's already been a lot of rough losses for this Clippers team with Golden State, and this could really be like a backbreaker.
They've taken the heartbreaking losses before, and there's like heart-shattering potential is definitely in play. The matchups are really interesting, though, because like DeAndre is their big advantage, right? But if Golden State's able to kind of scramble, you go small, be super aggressive in the passing lanes, try to deny DeAndre as many touches as possible, and then, you know, play the hat game, you know, can you limit that? And then on the other side, you know, Durant versus Ba Mute. I mean, Doc Rivers went on like a 4-minute rant about how good Ba Mute has been this season. comparing him to...
It's been that kind of month. Yeah. Even Ba Mute is...
He compared him to an offensive lineman who gets no credit. And, you know, it was like a real speech. I think there's some truth to it. I mean, he's been really good this season. And he is like kind of their most important defensive chip against the Warriors, because you can't have Durant going for 35 every night. And that's sort of, you know, that's what put the Warriors behind the eight ball, you know, during the Western Conference Finals last year, you know, Durant kind of getting going. I mean, that's how you, when you're game planning to slow Golden State down this season, it starts there. But, I mean, that's going to be a sacrifice. And so I think that puts even more on the bench, too. Like, how else can you kind of pick up for Ba Mute's lack of scoring? Well, guys like Spates have to go nuts randomly. You know, Felton has to give you a three or one or two threes here and there, kind of pick his spots to kind of keep things going. But, like, let me put it to you this way. If they played in a series starting today, who would you pick and how many games?
I would still take the Warriors, but I would say 7.
Well, we're on the exact same page. That's where I am too, and yeah. I think it would be
that's like the least bold take that you can like. It'll be close, but the Warriors will win. But I'm not ready to believe that much in the Clippers, and I'm also not ready to doubt the Warriors.
Yeah, but looming in the back of everyone's mind, including lots of people at Staples Center last night, was that preseason game where the Warriors just like ran the Clippers off the court. And I do think there's like a big brother mental edge, even though they're actually the younger brother.
That's the thing, yeah.
They're actually the younger brother if you go back, because like the Clippers did beat them in the playoffs first, but they like rose up so quickly that they sort of have the air of invincibility and all of the confidence. Yeah. But at the same time, like the Clippers may channel that and you know try to, you know, bust out of it. I guess we'll see. But we have to get that playoff series.
It would be fantastic. Maurice Spates revenge series. I'm in. I mean, like the Clippers have single-handedly made me a lot more excited for the West after the first month. So, I mean, that alone is an accomplishment. Like coming into the year, I think we were all kind of rolling our eyes about the playoffs. But now, like, let's roll it out there. Let's see what happens.
Yeah, I think it's the most anticipated playoff matchup that I have right now. Is there anything close for you? Another one that's kind of like lurking that I didn't think that we'd be talking about. What about Cavs-Bulls? That's another one that's kind of on that list for me.
That will be fun. That will be fun. That was another one of my lessons, actually, is I actually just wrote down Jimmy Butler is fucking awesome, because he is. And I just feel like everyone keeps scratching their heads and being like, how are the Bulls doing this? Like, can it last? How is this working? And I think the simplest answer to why it's working in Chicago is that Jimmy Butler is just that good, and he's good enough to make them like a little bit above 500. Like, they're not going to be at the top of the East, but they're also not going to fall off, because Jimmy Butler is like no joke.
So Jimmy's got to be a top 10 MVP candidate right now. You look at some of the early advanced numbers, very strong across the board. You compare him to, you know, wings at his position in the East, whether it's Paul George or DeMar DeRozan, I don't think it's been close. I think Jimmy's been way better all around in terms of impact than both those guys. Obviously, George has been limited a little bit by injury. One thing that we have to always kind of take into account with Jimmy is that even though he had the big breakout a couple years ago, because he tends to miss about 15 games over these last, you know, recent seasons due to injury, he never fully establishes himself in everyone's like collective mind as this like all-NBA type performer. So he's like a little bit sabotaging himself with the health issues in terms of his overall reputation. And
totally,
you know, this weekend was a great reminder, I think, of how good he was. I mean, played very well against the Clippers and then followed that up, you know, the very next night with no Wade, and he puts up 40. And the other thing I'd say about Jimmy too, and I was not expecting this, he and Dwayne Wade, they act like they're best buddies. Like, they, like, Dwayne Wade seems like he has basically kind of adopted Jimmy, and they're shooting together before the game for like 20 minutes, going through their entire shooting routines together, like from spot to spot to spot. I've never seen Jimmy smile so much. You know, he's somebody that I've kind of watched fairly carefully these last couple of years. I did a story on him a couple of years ago. Yeah. I've never seen him this happy, never seen him this loose. Of course, he was a little bit ticked off after he got that foul called on him late against Blake on Saturday night. That was a little different. But just general body language, he seems super happy.
It seems like Rondo kind of got voted off the island with those three.
100%.
Like, it's now Jimmy and Wade's team. Rondo, I would be surprised if he... I mean, could you see them letting him go at some point? Because the chemistry just makes more sense when he's not there.
Yeah, hopefully they didn't print up too many Three Alphas t-shirts. Like, hopefully they just like waited on that one from the marketing department, because it's two alphas. And those two guys have a nice interplay, I think, on the court too. Like, they've kind of made it work. Wade's played very well, and he's shooting well, which definitely helps. But that's what's driving them. In terms of Rondo, absolutely. I mean, I think if you view this team, rather than being this triad, if you just view it through the lens of like, Jimmy and Wade are the two must-haves. Everybody else is sort of built around them to complement them. There's virtually no scenario where Rondo, whatever it is he's supposed to be doing at this point of his career,
he's not complementing them.
He's not helping those guys. He doesn't shoot. In fact, he has like the worst true shooting percentage, I think, of any starting point guard in the league. Defensively, he might actually be worse defensively than he is offensively, which is saying a lot. The dude just is completely lost all the time. And it's not that he's gambling. It's that he's freaking daydreaming, head in the clouds, clueless. And so from that standpoint, you know, guys like Isaiah Cannon or Jerian Grant, I mean, they've got other options there. And then another option that I like, or another look, at least for certain situations, is just basically have Wade and Butler be your point guards and throw an extra shooter out there around them.
I think that's how they should close. I mean, Jerian Grant has been solid. Isaiah Cannon, it's amazing to me how much more I am willing to give him a chance in a Bulls jersey than when he was wearing a Sixers jersey the last few years. But I think long term, like, neither one of those guys are going to be the answers for like a playoff team, and I don't think Rondo's the answer. So like, Jimmy can play point, and those guys just, I mean, they're basically just trading off possessions anyways, right?
Yeah, you got Michael Carter Williams looming too, like once he gets back from the injury. So theoretically, you could tell him, like, dude, just lock in, try to play, you know, crazy defense, pressure the ball. Maybe he can give you some time. But yeah, Rondo to me is already extraneous. He's already does more harm than good. And if they moved on from him, whether that's some sort of a trade or whether they just kind of demote him or, you know, kind of cut his role to the point where he's like ready to go, that's fine. But, you know, that. Here's my big takeaway on the Bulls, though. I looked at their summer once all the moves were done and was like, well, they had some good ones, some idea, you know, getting rid of Rose, huge addition by subtraction, not paying Noah, great decision, getting Lopez, great move. But then the end of it felt so scattershot. It just kind of felt like they were all over the map. And as it turns out, they weren't all over the map. They just made one bad mistake in signing Rondo. They just didn't need to do that. All the rest of the moves like actually kind of worked out pretty well. And once Wade now has kind of gotten comfortable, the whole point of the Rondo move is no longer there. I mean, like he just kind of, you know, kind of became.
No, 100%. And to be fair, though, at the time, we weren't sure that Wade was going to be quite this good. And we're still not sure if he's going to be able to do this all year, in which case it's a little bit counterproductive. But, you know, credit to them. Like, they made a lot of people look stupid.
Well, yeah, so far through 1 month. And yeah, you're right. Like, they didn't know they were going to have Wade when they made the Rondo deal either. So you can kind of understand maybe the logic a little bit better at the time. But once you got Wade, it's like, well, you know, Rondo no longer really matters as much. And he has a hard time when he's not a central piece and really mattering. And I just don't think there's anybody who can get through to him when it comes to defensive intensity. Like, I don't know what it's going to take for him to bring it night to night. But like, and even in a playoff situation, like imagine they're playing against Cleveland, like how far are the Cavaliers going to sag off Rondo in the half court? Like they might not even have anyone close. Like if he's at the 3-point line, they might start their defense at the protected circle.
Yeah. And again, I just prefer watching the Bulls when Rondo's not there. And to circle back to your original, I think you make a really good point about Jimmy Butler's health, because he did. Every time he would build momentum over the past few years, he'd get hurt and miss 3 weeks here, 4 weeks there. And I think if he were to stay healthy all year, he would absolutely enter that Paul George territory, because he's also playing better this year than he ever has. So I don't know. I think there's a lot of head scratching with the Bulls, and Jimmy Butler deserves like 75% of the credit. But give me another one of your lessons here. We've got 10 more minutes with this.
Here's my lesson, and it's one that I actually did not believe in. Remember everybody talking about the start of the season? Oh, like the Warriors, like they don't want the pressure of a long winning streak to start the year. It's better to just lose a game. And then they come out and lay a complete egg against the Spurs. And I was like, wow, that was not the performance that they wanted on opening night. I honestly think that that conventional wisdom of like it's better to lose a game early to kind of take the pressure off is true now. Like I actually believe in it. I don't think I ever believed in it before, because think about this. Yeah. Like they've won 8 games in a row. They're on this streak where they've got like 30 plus assists every night. KD is out of his mind from an efficiency standpoint. Steph broke the 3-point record for threes in a game. Klay has pulled himself together. Draymond is already floating on a daily basis defensive player of the year conversation, starting with him. Of course, like that is a ripe cocktail for lots and lots of hype and all of us writing Warriors story day after day after day after day. And I don't know about you. I don't think I've written about the Warriors in like 3 weeks. And I asked some of the Warriors beat guys, like, what's it like? And they were all expecting this just insane frenzy. And they're saying that's really not how it is this year. When the Warriors came down to LA, I was surprised that like the Beatles vibe that they had last year wasn't there. And I really think it's all because they just lost that opening game. I think that that one game like made, like kind of just set the expectations differently. And they've kind of flown under the radar. And even look at this podcast. I mean,
they are kind of, because they're also blowing people off the court. Like they're scoring like 120 points a game.
Easily.
And I mean, when you talk about this podcast, like one of the reasons I don't like talking about the Warriors is because I know that in April, we're going to start like a 6 to 8 week run of talking about the Warriors constantly. So I'm like, all right, we're all set.
I feel you on that. But I guess what I meant is actually like this specific episode, because we just spent like the first 10 minutes talking about the Clippers. The Clippers are 13-2.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Guess what? The Warriors are 12-2. And like they've got two or three MVP, you know, they got two MVP candidates on their roster too. You know what I mean?
I had a Warriors take, a lesson from the first month. The more I've thought about it, did you see the news this week from Darren Revelle that Under Armour's stock is down? I Under Armour's stock is down and lost, like, I think it was $300 or $600 million in value because of Steph Curry's shoes.
I did see that.
Yeah. Well, that underscored the point. Like, the more I've watched the Warriors this year, it's just, it's now Durant's team, or Durant has certainly like dimmed the star of Steph. And I'm so mad at myself for not seeing this, seeing the writing on the wall last year. But I just really think Nike put him there and wanted him there solely to screw with Steph and to undercut him.
I don't believe that theory, but I think it's...
You really don't?
Nah, I think it's a
you
fun one.
You don't think
one.
It was any factor?
No, I think it's a factor. I mean, they're clearly weighing all of his business interests, but I tend to think
Nike's
that...
Nike's paying him like $200 million, I think, or $250.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying you shouldn't believe it, you know, like it's a good theory, like go with it. I'm just saying, I personally don't believe it. I think he just kind of came to, I don't know. I don't think it was the number one factor, but I think it's probably the number one byproduct for them. And they're probably over there smirking about it. I wouldn't blame them for that. I also think though that, I mean, there was a Steph bubble, right? And there was always a question of like, how long was it going to last, whether that's on the court or with his marketability. And you know, I think you actually made a wise point a couple minutes ago. Like, it's going to come back. Like, once everyone's looking at them during the playoffs, if they make another big run, you know, if Steph has 18 points in the third quarter, you know, against the Houston Rockets in game three, like, it's all going to come rushing back. The shoe sales are going to spike. But I think another point that should be made is that these signature sneaker lines across the board have had trouble. Like, they're not... The retros have really kind of driven a lot of sales. And so, I mean, whether it's Durant's shoe itself, whether it, you know, whether it's LeBron's shoe, that one, you know, tends to do pretty well. But, you know, you go across the different brands. I mean, they're all having a hard time really getting traction with the latest and greatest.
My thing with some of the sneakers is that most of them are pretty ugly. Like, I really like the Kyries, but a lot of the LeBrons, a lot of the Durants, the Steph... I mean, Steph's shoes have taken their fair share of hits, and like, I'm not going to pay $150 for that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and they put them out in lots and lots of different colors, and so now all of a sudden, you know, maybe you feel like you don't have the best one when they bring out a new color the very next week. And so if you're a kid, it's like, can you keep up? How many pairs can you afford? I mean, it's a really strange game, the signature shoe game and the apparel game. I do kind of wonder, like, from the brand standpoint, are they really getting their money's worth on these guys when it comes to like the actual sneaker sales, or is it all about reputation and kind of, you know?
Well, the point I was making had nothing to do with like the individual Steph sneaker sales, but I think this is the first time that Nike is actually getting its money's worth from Durant, because he's overshadowing the brand ambassador for the like the only real competitor that Nike has had in the last 15 years.
I mean, I think that the byproduct of the conspiracy theory that you're floating has some merits to it. I mean, it's tough. Like, there's only one ball. And like last night, Durant was the guy who had to sacrifice. I think he only had 14. They still put up well over 101 easily. But more often than not, he hasn't been the one sacrificing. It does kind of feel like it is his team. That was sort of my prediction coming into the season. It happened faster than I expected. And I think he is now at the point... You know, a couple of weeks after the last time we talked about this, where I think he's now succeeding on their terms too, right? Like, he is getting all of his points in that Warriors style, ball movement, huge offensive numbers. And I guess really the next thing to conquer after that is to really turn up the defensive intensity on a night-to-night basis. And I think those guys have done it certainly in spurts more recently when they've needed to. And I kind of am looking to see if they can sustain that going forward. But they're really good. It's Durant's show. And for Under Armour, it's time to get back in the lab, come up with some cool new shoes that you could sell in April, because that was a tough hit. I mean, those numbers didn't lie.
Basically, always bet on the Nike Illuminati winning out. But hey, we will be right back. Let's take a quick break to talk about Movement watches. You told me earlier in the day here that you did Movement research. Talk to me about watches.
It's crazy. So these MVMT Movement watches, they have a pretty simple concept. Like, they look really clean. They're not flashy over the top, but they look like they kind of match with any outfit. You know, you look cool if you're wearing one, right? Like, it just kind of has that vibe to it. So I've been asking people at, you know, various games, like, hey, have you ever heard of these watches? Like, what do you think about them? And the first two people that I asked both were wearing Movement watches, and they both swore by them and told me that they own multiple different watches. They have different bands they can switch on and off. They just like it because you know, it's just kind of eye-catching. They said, you know, they've gotten compliments from NBA players, from colleagues about the watches. It just kind of adds to their overall presentation. They're trying to look stylish. They're trying to look hip. They're trying to look cool. By the way, these were millennials, so that kind of tells you, like, this is the cutting-edge brand.
I have so many questions about this exchange, and I would listen to a separate podcast of your conversations about movement watches at Clippers games.
I'm serious. But like they have the diehard, they have the diehard fan base for a reason. I think ultimately what it boils down to is reasonable price point. It's not crazy expensive, and they're delivering good value. They look really sharp. They catch the eye, and they're not super expensive. So
I want people to know that none of that was in the script for the ad, and Ben was really having those conversations. And I don't know why, but I love it. And you should go to mvmtwatches.com today. You can get 15% off with free shipping and free returns by going to mvmtwatches.com/floor. So use that promo code. Next time you meet Golliver out in the world, you can talk to him about your MVMT watch and you can join the movement.
I mean, this is what people say to me. They're like, look, dude, I paid $100 for a watch that looks like it costs $500. I mean, that's a pretty simple way to boil it down, right? I mean, their watches are like $100 to $150 and they look classic.
Not only that, I think that Christmas is coming up and a watch is a really solid, like, thoughtful, classy gift to a family member.
Yeah, they got every different color, every different band style that you could possibly want. MVMTwatches.com/floor. MVMTwatches.com/floor.
Let's get back to it, though. I have one other lesson, which is that we can only learn so much from the first month, I guess. I'm still deeply confused about teams like the Jazz, teams like the Rockets. I don't know what to make about the Bucks because they, I mean, Giannis and Jabari might be good enough to carry them to 40 wins in a playoff spot. I don't know. There are just a lot of teams around the league that are still pretty confounding.
Can I talk to you 1 second about the Bucks? So you're mentioning my conversations at Staples Center. I met an amazing Australian journalist named Roy Ward last night, and the Bucks game happened to be on, and so I got to watch the Bucks game through the eyes of an Australian diehard, which meant
a Delhi super fan,
which meant that basically we got matching Matthew Dellavedova tattoos along our shoulders during the game as we screamed Aussie, Aussie, Aussie. And Dellavedova happened to have a couple of pretty big plays down the stretch of that game, and it looked like Christmas for this guy. Like, there was nothing in the world that could have made him happier than just Delhi, like, diving for a loose ball to get a jump ball, or like stepping into a three-pointer late, or, you know, deflecting a pass on a pick and roll. I mean, he was just absolutely loving life. And so,
Did you see Delhi's getting his own movie?
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. I mean, the way you framed it was like Giannis and Jabari. I mean, come on, man. I think it's kind of a big three.
Burying the lead international superstar, Matthew Dellavedova.
There you go.
Delhi has certain games where he'll have like 11 points and 9 assists, and he plays good defense. So I feel really validated by my enthusiasm. And then there are other times when he will go like 0-for-7 from the floor, 6 assists, will still somehow play like 35 minutes and not score a point. And that's when I'm like, oh man, tough times on Dellavedova Island.
Yeah, I know so much about Dellavedova and Patty Mills after that conversation. Like, I could probably give you their entire life stories. It's great. I'll save the listeners on that one. Hey, I have another lesson, though. Can I bring up another lesson?
Yeah.
This is not to pick on the Raptors fans. I know we've been fighting for years about it, or for at least weeks about it. But you saw the end of that Kings versus Raptors, just like crazy, insane replay scenario where the clock like started too late because there was a tip. And then they went to the review, and then rather like than giving them another chance at it, they just basically said the game was over. They waved off a game-tying shot by Terrence Ross, and the Raptors just had to take the loss, and like they had no recourse. And then they appealed like 19 different times, and the NBA just kept saying like, no, we got it right. No, we got it right. No, we got it right. So that was a messy scenario.
Technically, they did get it right. Isn't that true?
Yes. Technically, they got it right according to the rules. And, but I think kind of big picture, away from just the drama of that one weird end game. And if you didn't see it, like, honestly, It was
no,
so
I mean, the Raptors got screwed.
Yeah, but it was like so confusing that it's like not even worth going back to like figure out what happened if you didn't see it. If you did see it, you're outraged. So we understand where you're coming from. I think the bigger point here, though, is that the NBA replay system, basically every year, Adam Silver and the competition committee just talk about the tweaks they're making to the replay system. If you actually go look, there's a document that has every change to the replay rules over the course of like the last 10 years. And it's so long, like just pages and pages long of these like little minor tweaks that they make. And I think it's kind of a reminder that like no matter how many times you try to refine a system and to cover every little possible loophole, there will always be some play organically that completely foils the system. And this was one of those situations where the refs got it right by the rules, but the rules did not provide what felt like a fair ending. So everybody went home angry, and everyone hates the entire replay system, even though it kind of worked properly and even though the NBA was pretty transparent about what was going on. So it was one of those things where like simple is a lot of times better. And here I felt bad for everyone. Like everybody lost from this situation.
Look, I mean, so you don't watch the NFL at all, do you?
No, I'm on a high horse about that. And I'm glad there's many people who are finally getting around to joining me on that high horse.
Yeah, I'm not necessarily on a high horse, but I just have found it like unbearable over the last few years. And just be for a variety of reasons, but like the replayification of the entire game is just too much for me to handle. And I feel like the NBA should really, it would actually be a solid like institutional strategy to just do the opposite of whatever the NFL is doing in every facet of its business. And the replay system in the NBA is one area where like they ape a lot of the stuff from the NFL. And my biggest issue is that I just don't care about accuracy, because even when you do replay, like we saw the other night, like, and like you said, there's still teams that are going to get screwed. So if that's the case, like, don't slow down the game. Don't sap all of our enthusiasm. And I don't know, I just feel like it turns into kind of a different sport. Like certainly with football, is you end up watching the replays to see, to look for like football moves. You don't get as excited after catches because you're like, all right, well now we'll wait, and then we'll really celebrate if it's upheld after the review. And it's just like, I don't want any of that in sports. And this obsession with accuracy, I feel like it's a fool's errand.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. You know, for a long time, I was skeptical when people like Malcolm Gladwell and Henry Abbott would really bang the drum for like freedom of play, you know, like taking away the timeouts late in games, trying to get as few stoppages out of the game as possible, cutting down on the weird rules like clear path foul. I was like, yeah, you know, I kind of hear what you're saying, but I don't think it's really that big of a deal. The longer that I've watched these games and the more playoff games I've watched, you know, a lot of times the playoff games almost turn into like baseball, where it's like, okay, you're going to have your set piece and it's going to be like your team, you know, it's going to be very like segmented. Like, here's your set piece, their team calls timeout, here's their set piece. And then, you know, it doesn't have that free flowing nature, which is what obviously everyone's watching basketball to kind of see. So, you know, the desire, like Malcolm Gladwell is always talking about, oh, let's make basketball more like soccer, get it more free flowing. You know, put an advantage rule in there so that you don't necessarily have to blow the whistle. Try to, you know, cut down on the total number of fouls with whatever rule changes that you can make to
like FIBA games. And I'm not sure about the specific rules that are in place that create the style of play we see over there, but like, I have so much more fun watching FIBA basketball than I do watching NBA basketball. And I know we can't take their rule book and just throw it over here, but I think we want to get closer and closer to that sort of free-flowing approach, because ultimately it makes the games more watchable, and like ratings are driving all this stuff.
For sure. And like the most watchable teams are the ones that play that style when they can, regardless of these silly rules in their way, right? I mean, that's why we love the Warriors and the Cavaliers have kind of migrated to a style like that. I mean, you just go down the list of the best teams and they're
all
kind of going that
way.
My one
question for you, though. I have one. So do you think we've come too far to where like people know that the technology exists? There are 800 HD replays available for any big game. Have we come too far to eliminate replay entirely? Like, I feel like we would still have to have it for certain situations.
Yeah. I mean, I'm never going to go for like the nuclear option on things. I mean, because that sets you back really far. But I do think that if you just look through that document I was saying, like I encourage all of our listeners, like Google the NBA replay, like year by year editions. And the number one thing that you'll think is, God, this is way too much. And you'll just close the window because it's too long. It's too hard. And now imagine being a referee, having to be trained in all of these things. You know, now you're like doing these phone calls with Sakakis constantly, and all the broadcasters have to talk about that every single time. It's just, it's too much. Yeah. It's too much, you know?
Yeah. So cut it down. All right. Do you have any other lessons for us?
Well, this is a simple lesson, but I think we can agree Anthony Davis will be giving thanks on Thursday for Jrue Holiday being back in the lineup, and I think we can all give thanks for that, given the sensitive nature of his wife's health situation there. It's great to see him back on the court. His goggles are unbelievable. If you haven't seen them, definitely go look at them. And they're 2-0 with him in the lineup, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, and it really helps to have at least one really quality, proven NBA player running alongside you. It makes a difference. It's a difference between a hopeless season and a season with hope.
I think that's a solid revelation from the first month. Good players make a difference. Brad Beal, now that he's healthy, he had 44 last night, or 42, and it made a difference for the Wizards. I think Jimmy Butler in Chicago, healthy. The rest of that whole Bulls team is now healthy, and they're not awful. And so, yeah, I think that's a good thought, a good place to end on our first month look. So do you want to talk about the Raptors last night? I'm surprised that you're still alive.
No, there wasn't a lot from that game that felt new. I mean, they definitely have some positional holes. I thought DeRozan played pretty well. He kind of carried them at times. I thought Lowry showed up too. I mean, their front court's got some pretty serious holes. Like, they really need Damari Carroll healthy. Like, that is, we just talked about difference-making guys. That's sort of, to me, their difference-maker. And if they don't have him out there performing at the level that they paid him to perform at a couple years ago, their ceiling comes down pretty quickly to me. I mean, that's a really key piece. It was great
I
to
love
see.
It. Look, this is the most measured. You don't even want to talk about the Raptors. And
hey, look, I win my debates with class, okay? Tough week.
Yeah, good for you. Good
tough
for
week,
you.
Tough week for them. Their one really shady win over Denver away from being on a 5-game losing streak. I don't want to kind of rub it in.
Yeah,
too much.
Maybe the Kings game was sort of like a ball don't lie situation after the Nuggets game. But
there you go.
But yeah, I literally had blocked off like 4 minutes for you to go in on DeRozan. But nah, we're good. Final segment here. It's Thanksgiving, dude. We're not here to talk about DeRozan and Damari Carroll. Every year, Sports Illustrated does a series on the biggest turkeys in respective sports. I've never participated before, but I feel like we should do NBA turkeys on the pod. And I don't. Can you explain what exactly a turkey entails here in this context?
You're throwing this question to the vegetarian, really? I think...
No, dude, you're the SI veteran. I haven't been part of this series before.
Look, this turkey talk came out of nowhere. I don't know. I think if you're a turkey, you're just a turkey. And whenever you just mention the word NBA turkey and like kind of guys you're going to, you know, maybe throw tomato cans at or whatever that phrase is, I think one name is popping to every single person's mind immediately, and it's Phil Jackson. I mean, I think that's just like the obvious answer here. I'm not sure we talked about it. You know, his comments about Posse and how LeBron and Maverick Carter kind of pushed back on that pretty quickly and pretty forcefully. But I thought his entire handling of that situation, you know, sets him up for this turkey title. I mean, when Carmelo Anthony, when your own player is coming out like Carmelo did and is saying, like, I don't know why he's talking about the Cavaliers. Like, why is he even bringing this up? We're not playing them. Like, what's the point of this?
Carmelo was in a pretty tough spot because he is... positioned himself as this like social justice warrior, kind of. I hate using that term. I'm sorry for using that term. He cares about society, whatever. And not only that, he's best friends with LeBron and then obviously works for Phil. And so I thought he managed it pretty well. He didn't like excoriate Phil the way some people might have wanted, but he was forceful in his displeasure.
But I would say he picked a side, and he picked the right side. He picked LeBron's side.
Oh, yeah. No, exactly. And and he had to, is what I'm saying. Like, he couldn't have just come out and been like, well, you know, everybody has their own opinion. Like, and, you know, shout out to Melo. My thing with Phil, with that whole situation, I initially kind of wanted to defend him because what he was saying about LeBron is stuff that a lot of people have said about LeBron. Like, he was a handful in Cleveland in terms, especially the first go round. Like, he wielded a lot of power, and that was power that he didn't necessarily get in Miami. And that was one of the reasons that people have theorized that things didn't go well. Like, that's not like a new thing that Phil Jackson was dropping on the world. That had been out there. But the more I thought about it, I just haven't, like, I haven't heard anybody use the word posse that isn't in, like, kind of a condescending racist tone.
Well, there's no question that it's Phil Jackson, so it's going to be condescending. I mean, I'm going to leave it to LeBron and Maverick Carter to kind of talk about the undertones and how they felt that he meant it.
Like, it's a word that almost can't be used without racial undertones. And like, I don't think Phil Jackson's racist, but I do think it was more an indication of him being condescending. And that's the way he talks to LeBron.
Well, it was clearly the wrong button to push at the wrong time, though, right? I mean, right after the election, when everybody's frustrated. We talked before, you know, right in our election podcast about how clearly frustrated LeBron was, right? I mean, I think a certain level of this is like, look, dude, like, we're going to stand up and draw the line here. Like, you can't just do this.
So not only that, I don't blame, like, again, I don't think Phil Jackson is racist, but I don't blame LeBron and Maverick Carter or any NBA player, really, from, like, looking around at a league that's 85% black, where a lot of the media is white, a lot of the owners are white, the management, like, even the coaches. I don't blame them for being fed up with shit like this, where people, like, LeBron has built a really successful business among people who were friends that now became associates, and they've all done really well. So like, he's well within his rights to snap and be like, get out of my face, Phil Jackson.
For sure. Hey, you know, Brian Gumbel from HBO Sports, he's got his own show, and he has a commentary on this issue that they kind of sent over today. And he basically made the point that this is not just about the word posse. It's about kind of coded language in general. And he kind of pointed to broadcasters, you know, saying that black players are born athletes, white teammates are hard workers. You know, end zone dances might be bad, but the Lambo leap is okay. They call, you know, Odell Beckham might be a showboat, but Gronkowski is just colorful. You know, some guys are in a fight, you know, like Deli. You know, Deli's a scrapper, but then a different player
well,
might be.
Deli is a scrapper.
No, I know, but
Deli, and that's not racial. Patrick Beverley is also a scrapper. It's cool. There are just certain guys are just scrappers.
Yeah, and but then what he's saying is that there's also that term thug. So would anyone ever call Deli? Would anyone ever call Deli a thug? You know, and then he also points out that black viewers know that, you know, if a white guy is being called kind of heady or has the intangibles, you know, those are phrases that might be about white players and not as often about black players. I mean, clearly it's a systemic thing, and you know, I'll put myself out there, sort of like Stan Van Gundy did a little bit. It's like when you're writing thousands and thousands of words about players over the course of like the Top 100 project, or even just like player breakdowns that we do, at some point, like, you're going to lapse into cliche. Like, it just happens, right?
Yeah.
And those cliches are so deeply ingrained because we've all grown up with them for years and years and years. There's not really any way to just kind of like erase those from your memory, that occasionally that stuff is going to slip out. Is that what happened for Phil? I don't know. But I do know that, like, when you're writing about a guy and you want to call him heady, you're doing that not just because it's you know, the word that you think of, but it's because it's a word that you think of because of the 15 years of other people calling him or similar looking players or whatever that same word, right? And so it's a hard cycle to break.
Phil, and I do wonder whether part of it is that there's a chance that he hasn't paid attention for the last 15 to 20 years of pop culture, and I think that's probably letting him off too easy. But I mean, posse really hasn't been an acceptable word to use since like the late 90s, when Phil was last like truly relevant. But yeah, you're right about like all the coded language is bullshit. And I think that ultimately the solution is to hire more people of color and people from diverse backgrounds, women, and get them into the media. And I think that's really the only way you sort of shake up the cycle a little bit.
Yeah, and I'm sure there's been some progress on that, those fronts in recent years. But I think it, to me, this is a generational problem. I mean, that's how we should be looking at it, right? Like, we just want to be in a better place 30 years from now than where we were 30 years ago, right? And I think we're better than where we were probably in the 70s and 80s when it comes to this stuff. And in general, at least in the popular discourse about basketball players, I would hope we are. But, you know, like LeBron standing up is definitely an important step. I think I admire him for doing that, especially given the climate right after the election. I understand that people are going to push back on that pretty hard. But I think he also realizes, like, this isn't going to get solved during his career, right? Like, and he's also probably thinking about it like, you know, LeBron James Jr., he could be an NBA star. Does he want to have to deal with people questioning LeBron James Jr.'s posse in 15 years? You know, that's the last thing LeBron wants.
Can I also say, you mentioned something earlier, like the difference between end zone celebrations and the Lambeau leap. It, like, when I say LeBron wielded a lot of power initially in Cleveland and it rubbed some people the wrong way, that I think that's true for a lot of superstars in every sport, in all races. And like, and the way Phil Jackson framed it gave it like a coded sort of undertone, whereas like you could say the same thing about Brett Favre when he was with the Packers. Like, that was the first athlete that jumped to mind when I first started thinking about this last week, is like Brett Favre was kind of a diva and they had to tailor a lot to him, and like it just, that's the way that comes with being a star. And I don't really know what that has to do with our conversation here, but I just feel like I don't blame LeBron for feeling singled out with some of that stuff, because it goes with a territory.
I hear you. And I think, you know, to tie this back to the turkey thing, we couldn't get a public apology, you know, like, sorry I offended you, or sorry you felt offended. Like, even if it's one of those fake apologies where it's like, sorry that you felt offended, might've been the way to play that, you know?
For the record, the turkey segment was definitely not supposed to be that serious, but it's true. Like, I guess we had forgotten to talk about that. And Phil Jackson is a turkey, not just for that, but also for not apologizing. Also, the Derrick Rose trade alone would make him a turkey of the year. The Joakim Noah contract, I like Phil, and I'm willing to defend him for a lot of things, but I really feel like it's probably time for him to go back to Los Angeles.
Yeah. Remember that press conference when they hired him, how excited people were? Well, feels like a long time ago.
People were that excited. Reggie Miller is another turkey. I didn't even like come up with explanations, but Ernie Grunfeld is like a personal turkey for me. Draymond Green, I think Draymond might be in the running for Turkey of the Year had he not recruited Kevin Durant.
I think he clearly had the worst offseason of any player. So we've gone through that one blow by blow and pick by pick. So we don't need to.
Do you think? What do you think of we? I have not gone through it pick by pick. I was thankfully offline when all of his Snapchat business happened. Is Mark Cuban in the running for Turkey of the Year?
I think so. I mean, as we sort of accurately forecasted, the whole credentialing snafu thing kind of came to a resolution fairly quickly. But he didn't make sense at all throughout the entire thing in terms of what his beefs were. And then he kind of capitulated in a press conference that was released, surprise, surprise, Friday, 5 p.m., you know, when nobody's paying attention. It just seemed like such a strange, you know, battle to pick with guys he shouldn't be picking battles with, you know? I mean, Mark Stein, Tim McMahon, I'm glad those guys came out on top with sort of how the whole thing played out, but I just thought that was really silly, and I don't know. I'm glad it's done. Yeah, I'm glad it's behind us, but it was a bad precedent, and I hope we don't keep going down that way, especially given how much press access has become this big talking point after the election. It's like the last place that we need the same kind of like parallel arguments going on in politics is the sports, especially when we've already kind of solved
games.
Yeah. Especially when we've already kind of solved these things in the NBA. It's like, we have pretty good setup here. Like, just chill. Like, don't push these buttons right now.
Don't screw it up. I agree. That was also just a classic Cuban controversy where everybody kind of rolled their eyes and waited for him to relent.
And robots just, were involved.
Yeah, yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah, some vague futurism sprinkled in there. It was it was perfect. Like I'm all set, Mark Cuban. Another turkey of the year, Byron Scott. Oh, I might give him the award outright, even over Phil Jackson. I just think, sure, we can credit Luke Walton for how fun the Lakers are, but I think it also probably reflects pretty badly on how he handled them the last few years.
You know what's a fun mental exercise? You know, when you're writing your columns, you're always kind of taught, like, what's the opposite viewpoint, right? Like, what kind of counter arguments do I need to kind of push back against or be prepared to kind of acknowledge? Right. Let's
like
try
the
to
NBA
make
in the NFL.
Let's try to make the counter argument for Byron Scott being like, anything productive for these young players. Like, it is an impossible argument to make. Those guys were miserable last year, and look how quickly it's turned around.
The only thing you can say is that he was so bad that he accidentally like depressed expectations for them this year, so that now everyone is like ready to throw them a title parade for starting the year like 7-6. So in that respect, sure, he took some pressure off this year, but I don't think you can make any other case.
I think the other case would be he steered the Kobe ship into the harbor with the 60 points and 50 shots on the last night. Like, no other coach, I think, could have created such a weird environment to allow Kobe to do that.
Yeah. No, look, if we run low on topics next, like through the rest of the season, one day we're going to have to do like a podcast solely on that game, because it was the playoffs were just starting and everything. Like, it was too chaotic to really appreciate just how psychotic that night was, but it was amazing. And I'm glad Byron Scott was involved.
So I think that's, if we're making the pro Byron Scott argument, it's that his real job was to make sure Kobe went off. Well, they kind of did that.
Perfect, I mean, shadow tanking agent too. Yeah.
Yeah. They got the top pick. That's right. They got Ingram. And like you're saying, he kind of submarined expectations on their young guys so that they could kind of break out this season. So all in all, maybe Byron Scott's like the coach of the year. That's a pretty good case that we just made.
Yeah. Well, and he's because D'Angelo Russell was going to struggle anyways for the first 3 months. So actually Byron Scott was like a pretty convenient scapegoat. So yeah, maybe it worked out well. I don't know. And do we have any other turkeys?
I think that we nailed the biggest turkeys. I think we pretty much hit those turkeys out of the ballpark.
Okay, well, good. I have to go, but we got into Phil Jackson before I could play my favorite moment of the podcast. So here we go. Sound effect. That is a turkey sound effect that people say we don't prepare for these podcasts. No. I prepared by searching turkey sound effects for us. And I have nothing else to say. I'm ready for Thanksgiving. How about you?
Oh, I just wanted to add, this is kind of an important point. MacWeldon.com, promo code open. And also,
Ben is thankful for sweatpants.
Oh, and by the way, Andrew, I really think you should know MVMT watches / floor.
Yeah, / floor. Open floor. Get all your promo clothes. Yeah, no, happy Thanksgiving, everybody. We will be back next week to talk hoops. I'll talk to you soon, man.
All right, man, take care.
This has been a digital media production. Find your voice.
Another great edition of Open Floor is in the books. Did you know Locked On has a daily podcast for all 30 NBA teams? If you're a Lakers fan, search Locked On Lakers. A Celtics fan, search Locked On Celtics. Warriors fans, search Locked On Warriors. Yes, all 30 NBA teams have a daily bite-sized podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team.
It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.